What does Jesus tell us about the law? Welcome to The Good Word. I'm your host, Alden Thompson, from the Walla Walla University School of Theology. My conversation partners are, again, Paul Dibdall and Dave Thomas, also from the School of Theology. And we are going to address an aspect of the teachings of Jesus, namely, the law of God. And I deliberately, when I introduced that question initially, what does Jesus tell us about the law? I deliberately used a somber tone of voice because I have never heard anyone in our day talk about the law in a positive way. If somebody says, it's the law, you know, that it's almost never in a friendly tone of voice.
Yeah, and if we're talking about religious law, I think that people react even more strongly against that than just civil law.
And why do you think that is? I agree with you, but I'm wondering why you think that is.
Why would that be?
Well, I'm wondering if that is tied in with the transition from Old Testament to New Testament, because there is a huge difference between attitude towards law under the heading of Torah in the Old Testament. I mean, the longest psalm is on Torah, law. It's wonderful stuff. But there are – go ahead.
Well, I did kind of cut you off, though, Alden, but guess I'll, you gave me a moment here. So, yeah, here goes. I think that maybe the reason that it's more negative is civil law, people in their right mind recognize it's kind of a logical sort of way of operating as a society, that you can't just do anything. And so we say, okay, sometimes it pinches me a little bit, but I think most people's conception of religious rules are kind of that they're arbitrary something that you take by faith from a kind of abstract power in the sky that they don't recognize God's law as being kind of a common sense good way to live. I think that's a misconception of God's law, but I think that's civil law kind of makes sense. But religious law, come on.
But religious law in so many ways mirrors civil law. I mean, you look at the Ten Commandments, 9 of them are on the books of most countries, the law books of most countries.
And I would add in the additional legislation, and I think that's an important concept, in the Old Testament, the death penalty is there for 9 of the 10. The only one that doesn't have the death penalty for breaking it is the 10th one. It shall not covet. See? Now, the reason why the law...
That's not in the Ten Commandments. You're saying in civil
additional laws. See?
Oh, okay.
See, an important passage here is Deuteronomy 4, 13 and 14. And I heard this from Graham Old, University of Edinburgh, when I got fed up with students losing their faith when they found things in the Bible they didn't think were supposed to be there. So I was putting the finishing touches on one of my books, and I just stopped by his office, and he asked me what I was doing, and I just said what I told you. I got fed up with students losing faith over things they didn't think were supposed to be there. So I decided to write a book that made perfectly clear those things that never change and those things that do. And so I just simply said the one great principle of love, the two great commandments, and the Ten Commandments. There you draw your double line. Everything else illustrates and applies that. And he says, that's exactly where Scripture puts it. And he turned me to Deuteronomy 4, 13 and 14. It's just an amazing passage. The first verse 13, it talks about the four things that are in a category by themselves. He talked to all the people. He calls it covenant. He talks commandments. And he writes it on two stone tablets. That's in verse 13. And then the next verse says, and the Lord charged me at that time to teach you statutes and ordinances. Now it's not all the people. It's just to Moses. And he changes the vocabulary. Instead of covenant and commandments, it is now statutes and ordinances. I just listened amazed. The only thing you'd have to do to make that a complete study on law is to go to Deuteronomy 31, where the Ten Commandments go inside the ark. And the additional laws, with the death penalties, etc., go in the book beside the ark. You know, it doesn't take a great Philadelphian lawyer to see the difference between those two. Now, the point that I was going to make before you interrupted
me. Yeah, before I interrupted you.
Yeah, that's right. Was
that, glad you remembered that.
That when Israel finally learned that they'd gone into captivity, the destruction of Jerusalem because of disobedience, they finally said, boy, we're going to fix that. We will never go into captivity again for disobedience. And they not only began keeping the law, but they began putting a fence about the law. And so in the New Testament, you have two amazing verses, two amazing passages that talk about where law had become a burden. And I think it, you know, I'm just reasoning out of my own experience. If, I hate to be told what to do. Now, Dave is my boss, the dean here. And he knows that I don't relate positively to anything that he tells me that I have to do. So he doesn't very often do that, see.
But that means that when I do have to do that, you are very compliant, right?
Well, I wouldn't go as far as to say that.
We're being recorded now, gentlemen, so.
But if somebody tells you, first time through, you know, you go to a new job and somebody takes you under their wing and you're very grateful. They tell you about the corporate culture and everything, and wow. But if the second day they come and tell you the same thing, and the third day, there gets a point where you say, I've had it up to here. So you go to Romans 7, where you have this incredible tension. Paul says, I like the law, I know it's good, but I hate it, back and forth, back and forth. And the other one in Acts 15, where Peter talks about circumcision, he says, we've laid a burden on the people which neither we nor our ancestors have been able to bear. These are God-given laws. They become a burden. So I think that's part of what happens, why law is not a very happy thought in the New Testament, and we've just carried that on.
But I think we should be much happier for the law than we are. You know, we complain a lot about the laws, and I think that we have too many laws. You know, some of them are very finely spun, but some basic laws render society orderly. And wouldn't you like to live in a place where people willingly complied with the laws instead of trying to break everything? I mean, I like a lawful society.
And most of us in our sober moments recognize that. The stoplight, the green light, the red light.
Yeah.
You know, while we hate it when it changes, you know, in our more sober moments we'd say that's really a help.
Yeah, don't steal, don't commit adultery, don't.
All of that stuff. Yeah.
So what are Jesus and the law?
What did Jesus tell about the law?
He said it is good.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say, is that it's good.
And it's enduring. He said it's not going to pass away.
I came, Matthew chapter 5, do not think that I have come to abolish the law or the prophets, Jesus said. I have not come to abolish them, but to fulfill them.
Now, that's a very interesting word. Do you think it's appropriate to change that around so the meaning comes clear or not? Fulfill gives the impression the law has been done away with, don't have to worry about it anymore.
Well, if we don't really look at the phrase that comes before, where he says, I didn't come to abolish it. Yeah.
Yes.
So it is probably helpful.
But many Christians say, I've not come to abolish it, but to abolish it. You see, if you take it to fill full of meaning, that's what those comparisons. And I think it was you, Paul, or maybe it was Ernie Bercy, a former colleague, who said that.
If it was really good, go ahead and give credit to me.
Okay,
that's fine.
But you have those seven contrasts. You have heard, but I say, and I think it may have been Bercy. I'm sorry, Paul, but I think it may have been Bercy who said that. But he said that word but there, that's too strong. It uses a Greek word. It's just more and.
Yeah.
So that you get a both and approach. Yeah. But each one of those fills the law full of new meaning.
Mm-hmm.
The Old Testament says you should not kill. Jesus says, and you also shouldn't even hate. So the attitude that Jesus takes towards law is a very positive one, but he internalizes it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think I may have told Bercy that a few years ago. You may have heard it through him. It is definitely from Bercy.
Yeah.
Very good.
So Jesus has a very positive view of law there. What about the new covenant, which is often best misunderstood? Now, that's an Old Testament law. Jeremiah 31, 31 to 34, where it's the promise where there's going to come a time when nobody will say, know the Lord, for they shall all know me, from the least of them to the greatest, says the Lord, for I will fulfill.
Inscribe, I'm going to, I'll write it on their hearts.
I will forgive their iniquity and remember their sins no more.
Mm-hmm.
See? Now, that's got to come close to be one of my favorite ones, because I want to live in a world where Dave never tells me what to do. You know, it's intuitive, see. That's the nature of the law, that it becomes intuitive. And that's an Old Testament command, not just a New Testament. See, it comes initially. So this contrast between Old Covenant and New Covenant is not Old Testament, New Testament. It's between a renewal. That's probably the best word. New Covenant is a renewal.
Yeah, where it ceases to be simply an external, something external, but it becomes internalized and lived out. With the help of the Spirit in our own hearts and minds.
Yeah. Now, a passage that we mentioned several weeks ago, Romans 5, where Dave turned to that, I think if you can switch around grace and law, it's very helpful. While we were yet sinners, while we were yet weak, while we were yet sinners, while we were yet enemies, I like to think of that in terms of grace before law. Because from a motivational point of view, if we can accept that grace comes first, then we can begin to look at law as a more positive way. And the Old Testament story that I love to tell here is Israel coming out of Egypt. They did not deserve to be delivered. They were kicking against the pricks. These people that were rebellious, God took out of Egypt, showed them grace. And that grace preceded what happened at Mount Sinai. Mm-hmm. When they came to Mount Sinai, because they'd experienced grace, they could say, wow, this is a wonderful God who has shown us how to live.
Yeah, he brought them out of the land of slavery first.
Yep. So if you were going to teach someone about the law, where would you go first? Could you put a positive spin on it? Or would you want to change the word?
No, I think it's a wonderful word. And we've talked a fair bit about Old Testament stuff here today. And I think that's where the meaning itself, the word Torah, my understanding is that really law is just an okay translation of that. Probably better is the idea of instruction or guidance. And I think for most of us, we relate more positively. Instructions are helpful. Guidance is helpful. We recognize that. And I think that's what law is. And certainly, Jesus speaks positively of the law, as we've already said.
Yeah. And there's an interesting verse, the only one I know specifically, where it says law is adapted to individual needs. That's Matthew 19:8.
So divorce. How do we get the human to love the law so that they internalize it and live by it willingly instead of wanting to break it all the time?
I think it's an appreciation of grace. Once you recognize what God has done, the law is good news. But you have to get the rebel heart touched first.
That's right.
And I think that's very important.
Because the law just applied stirs up the rebel heart.
I think the example of people here is really important. As you see someone else living in harmony with the law, and you see the way their life is benefited and blessed by that, I think that's part of it also. Then we are more open to it ourselves.
Hmm. And I've had some people who say, I was talking to a man who was very unhappy about his previous life. And I said, I've never experienced that kind of tension, he says, but your life, because you've lived within the community, is a great hope for me. I live in that kind of hope. So it is a very positive thing if we can see it that way. Next week, we talk about the Sabbath, part of the law. My conversation partners will again be Paul and Dave. I want to thank our program engineer, David Olson, and for all of you for listening in. For the Good Word, I'm Alden Thompson.
You've been listening to Good Word, a production of the School of Theology at Walla Walla University and KGTS-FM. To order a copy of today's broadcast, you can call 509-527-2194. Thanks for listening, and we'll be here next week at this time with Good Word.